Today, the economic and fiscal twilight zone. The DFA Daily to the 23rd of July 2020. Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour and with a touch of philosophy on the side. We look in some detail today at the economic and fiscal update, and it says importantly that there are a series of assumptions behind the numbers which are at best rubbery, but it signals a total debt burden north of $850 billion in the next couple of years. And that is above the current budget limit. And we also look at how consumers are responding to the current financial crisis, because it looks like household consumer expenditure will remain weak, with a significant impact on broad finances. And in both cases, there are some assumptions that the Victorian lockdown will be eased and the economy will slowly recover. But that, of course, cannot be guaranteed. And the risks of a lockdown in parts of New South Wales are, in fact, real. But first, the Melbourne Institute survey of 1,200 persons aged 18 years and over, which is stratified by gender, age and location to be representative of the Australian population, says that on their Wave 14 results, satisfaction with government policies to support jobs and keep people at work has been falling steadily through June. Between waves 11 and 14, the proportions satisfied with government policies fell from 66% to 58%, while the proportion dissatisfied rose from 15% to 18%. No states really stand out as being especially different from the rest. However, Victoria stands out as the state with the highest proportion of people who are limiting their activities outside of their house, such as shopping, going to restaurants or taking public transport. And that's because, of course, the concerns about the COVID-19. In Wave 14, that proportion stands at 41% for Australia, down from 47% in Wave 11. When the question was last asked, the proportion fell in all states excepting Victoria, which rose from 50% in Wave 11 to 58% in Wave 14. With respect to financial stress, the proportion of people who report having difficulties paying for essential goods and services fell from 25% to 22%. Victoria is the only state showing an increase in the proportion of those in financial stress, and that's up by 2 percentage points. This proportion declined in all the other states. Financial stress refers to the situation of having difficulties paying for essential goods and services, while financial vulnerability refers to being in financial stress or making ends meet. But only 40% of all households are feeling comfortable. The proportion felt depressed and anxious most of the time decreased by 2 percentage points, while the proportion who felt depressed and anxious a little of the time during the past week increased by 2 percentage points. But overall, the proportion experiencing mental distress appears to have stabilised. In this wave, they also asked respondents about their spending. When asked to compare their total spending now with the pre-COVID-19 days at the beginning of the year, 33% said they were spending the same, but 45% said they were spending less. When asked to think about their future spending, specifically to compare their expected spending at the end of 2020 with that at the beginning of 2020, 39% expect their total spending to be the same, while 33% expect to be spending less. And this indicates a concern that life will not be back to normal by then. The spending situation varies across the state. Consider the net proportion spending less, in other words, subtracting the proportion saying they are spending more from the proportion saying they're spending less, shows that this net value is positive. Lower net balances for December 2020 relative to January 2020. This means that while spending will improve towards the end of the year, the expectation is that spending will, on balance, still be less than before COVID-19. This is serious, as household consumption expenditure is already low. And in fact, household consumption expenditure fell in all states from positive quarterly growth in December 2019 to negative values in March 2020. Consumption growth is expected to be also negative in the June quarter. But beyond that, further declines in spending will seriously hamper the economic recovery process. And so now to the Treasurer's statement today. We know now that the national debt is forecast to break all records. Gross debt will reach $851.9 billion this financial year, or 45% of GDP, and net debt will hit $677.1 billion, which is 35.7% of GDP. For those with a job, wage growth will be poor, forecast to fall from 1.75% over the last financial year to 1.25% this financial year. The update predicts the economy to contract by 0.25% over last financial year and to contract by 2.5% this financial year, and the outlook for both the global and the domestic economies remain highly uncertain, they say. The evolution of the public health crisis will shake the recovery trajectory. Controlling the spread of the virus remains a significant challenge, with COVID-19 infections continuing to rise. Globally, even where infection rates appear to have been controlled, further outbreaks, such as those being experienced in Victoria, could set back recovery at any time. And further outbreaks and cautionary behaviour of businesses and households threaten the outlook both in Australia and globally. There are also risks that the substantial increase in global debt may lead to credit tightening and financial instability, slowing the pace of recovery, they said. The extent of any longer-lasting effects from this crisis are also highly uncertain. Longer-lasting effects from economic scarring may drag on future activity, they said, including as a result of persistently high unemployment. Australia's budget deficit hit almost $86 billion last financial year, and that's the biggest blowout to the bottom line since World War II. The deficit is projected to grow even further this financial year, with the government forecasting a blowout of more than $184 billion in 2021. The government has delayed the budget until October and instead today delivered an economic and fiscal update, which revealed the depths of the economic destruction of the coronavirus. Treasury is predicting the unemployment rate will be 9.25% by the end of the year. The most significant economic impact of the crisis has been on jobs, particularly for women and young people, though there was some improvement in June. This is consistent with the employment composition of the industries that have been most affected by the restrictions, such as accommodation and food services. Beyond 2020, labour market conditions will strengthen, but it will take some time for the unemployment rate to decline, the statement said. It forecasted an unemployment rate of 8.75% at the end of this financial year next June. As the labour market recovers, people will return to work in a number of ways, which may not be reflected in the headline data on employment and unemployment, but will reduce the effective rate of unemployment. This is evident in the data already. By June, the effective unemployment rate was close to 11%, with employment higher than in May, because fewer people were working 0 hours for economic reasons and more people were counted in the labour force. Average hours worked had also picked up from its trough in April as people started to return to more normal work patterns. However, measured unemployment continued to rise in June as more people returned to the labour force than were able to find work. The measured unemployment rate is forecast to continue to rise as more people are drawn into the labour force. The measured unemployment rate is a key uncertainty. It will depend on how employers allocate available hours among existing employees versus hiring new workers. If businesses choose to increase hours for existing staff by more than expected rather than hiring new workers, the unemployment rate could be higher than expected. On the other hand, the unemployment rate could be lower if businesses absorb a higher number of new workers at a lower level of average hours than expected. The degree to which the participation rate rises over the next several quarters is also a key sensitivity around the forecast unemployment rate. Sensitivity analysis suggests that the measured unemployment rate could be between 7% and 10.75% by December, depending on how the available hours are split between existing and new employees, or the degree to which the participation rate recovers towards pre-crisis levels. And elsewhere, dwelling investments are forecast to fall by 16% in 2021. The fall in the June quarter is forecast to be 7%, given cancellations and delays in residential projects reflecting reduced demand, health restrictions on construction sites, and some supply chain disruptions. A further 11% decline in dwelling investments is anticipated in the September quarter. They say the Home Builder Program is expected to provide a significant boost to a future pipeline of work, and there are some early indications that has already improved confidence and incentivized some buyers to return to the market. The program is expected to contribute around $1.6 billion in activity in 2021, but the total residential construction activity is expected to remain subdued for some time. A new business investment is forecast to fall by 12.5% in 2021. It's driven by a significant deterioration in the outlook for non-mining investment, which is forecast to fall by 25.5% in the June quarter. Containment measures, alongside an environment of uncertainty, are expected to drive a sharp decline in machinery and equipment investment as businesses seek to preserve cash while operations are impacted by restrictions. Real-time data, they say, suggests that around three-quarters of firms have been operating under modified conditions as a result of the pandemic, including changed work practices, payment methods, operating hours, and suppliers. Business solvency is also at risk, with around two-thirds, yes, two-thirds of all businesses reporting decreases in revenue and the number of firms deferring loan repayments and renegotiating lease agreements. Our economy has taken a big hit, and there are many challenges to confront, Mr. Frydenberg said. In December last year, Mr. Frydenberg was forecasting a $5 billion budget surplus in 2019-20, but coronavirus spending measures, including the $86 billion JobKeeper wage subsidy, has instead taken debt to record levels. These deficits reveal the real cost to the budget of protecting lives and livelihoods as a result of coronavirus, the Treasurer said. The government expects net debt to reach $488 billion at the end of June, and it expects it will grow beyond $677 billion, equivalent to almost 36% of gross domestic product this financial year. Gross debt was $684 billion at the end of 2019-20 and is tipped to be almost $852 billion by 2021. Now, if realised, gross debt would exceed Australia's debt ceiling of $850 billion, and the Treasury said the government would revisit the debt ceiling in the budget because Australia was in, quote, a very difficult and different time, and a new approach was needed. The government faces the prospect of needing decades to pay back the debt incurred during the pandemic, but Mr. Frydenberg refused to set a time frame besides a number of years. We're not putting a date on it because we want to grow the economy, he said. What I can tell you is we're doing everything to get people back into jobs and ultimately grow the economy. Income from tax fell $31.7 billion in 2019-20, and the government expects a $63.9 billion decline this financial year. Yes, Australia finds itself in a very challenging fiscal position, Finance Minister Matthias Cormann said, but we are in a better, stronger, more resilient position than almost any other country around the world. Mr. Frydenberg said almost 709,000 jobs were lost to coronavirus in the June quarter, and the official employment rate is 7.4%, but that fails to account for people attached to jobs thanks to the government's JobKeeper wage subsidy, or people who have left the workforce. The government believes the effective unemployment rate is 11.3%, down from more than 13% in recent weeks. It expects the official and effective unemployment rates to converge in the months ahead, but Mr. Frydenberg conceded further restrictions and outbreaks would likely affect the forecasted 9.25% unemployment rate by the end of the year. He said the government expected unemployment would be at elevated levels into early next year. Without the government's economic support, the unemployment rate would have been 5 percentage points higher, he said. So the government's action has actually saved 700,000 jobs. Well, it's all a matter of perspective there, isn't it? And while the unprecedented speed and scale of the government's economic response to the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as automatic stabilisers, have resulted in a rapid increase in borrowing, historically low interest rates mean that the cost of servicing this debt is relatively low. The assumed market yield in the update is a weighted average yield for future issuance of Treasury bonds at around 0.8 percentage points, compared with around 1.1 percentage points in the 2019-20 MIEFO. Low debt servicing costs may assist in reducing the stock of debt as a share of the economy over time. And the key assumptions that underpin all of these forecasts are worth looking at, because the outcomes could be substantially different to the forecast depending on the extent to which these assumptions hold. For example, outside of Victoria, restrictions are assumed to be lifted in accordance with the three-step process from the 8th of May 2020. Step one, is assumed to have been in place from mid-May to mid-June. Maintain a 4 square metre per person and 10 person limit for indoor activities. Step 2. Opening is assumed to have been in place from mid-June to mid-July. Maintain a 4 square metre per person and 20 person limit for outdoor activities. And step 3. Openings is assumed to be in place from mid-July to the end of September, except in Victoria. Maintain a 4 square metre limit per person and 100 people for indoor activities. The 4 square metre per person rule is assumed to remain in place from the end of September until the end of 2020. And they assume that there will be localised outbreaks like those in New South Wales now, but they will be contained. And on average, they do not delay the lifting of the restrictions set out. But they did actually set out some specific exceptions to these broad assumptions. Firstly, stay-at-home restrictions were reintroduced across metropolitan Melbourne and the Mitchell Shire from the 9th of July. These restrictions require people to stay at home unless shopping for food, providing care and caregiving, exercise or study and work if it cannot be completed from home. These restrictions are assumed to remain in place for 6 weeks, easing back to step one opening of restrictions in mid-September before the gradual move to the final step by mid-December. The Victorian border with New South Wales and South Australia is assumed to be closed until the 19th of August 2020, with freight allowed to pass between the states along with essential travel. And international travel is assumed to remain at low levels until the end of the June quarter 2021. Net overseas migration is significantly affected by international travel restrictions and constraints on the ability of applicants to meet visa application requirements, and is assumed to fall from 232,000 in 2018-19 to be 154,000 in 2019-20 and just 31,000 in 2021. The government implemented international travel bans in March 2020, and this prevented all arrivals on visitor and temporary migration visas and prevented Australian citizens and permanent residents from departing Australia. Between July and December 2020, only citizens, permanent residents, New Zealanders and a small number of international students are assumed to be able to travel to Australia based on announced policy to date. And from January the 1st to the 30th of June 2021, it's assumed that the travel ban will be lifted, but that a 2-week quarantine period will be required for all arrivals to Australia. And this leads to the resumption of arrivals by temporary and permanent migrants, but at lower levels overall than normal. Well, what about a second wave? Treasury estimates that relative to a pre-pandemic economy, GDP was around $4 billion lower for every week the containment restrictions from late March to mid-May were in place. These containment restrictions included closures to high-risk activities, including pubs, nightclubs and gyms, restricting cafes and restaurants to takeaway only, the effects of school closures, stay-at-home restrictions, and the physical distancing requirements limiting venues to one person per 4 square metres. Following the 3 steps of easing restrictions, Treasury estimates that economic activity could increase by around $2 billion per week within a few months, or around half of the original fall. If similar large-scale restrictions were imposed across all of Australia, this would likely reduce economic activity to similar levels as observed across April and May, and therefore would likely cost the economy at least $2 billion per week compared to where we may have been without a second wave of infections. Less severe or more geographically targeted restrictions would not have as large an effect on economic activity. In this case, rather than experiencing another sharp downturn in economic growth, it would be more likely that the speed of economic recovery would be slowed. This would partly be as a direct result of the restrictions themselves, but also from the spillover effects, as community outbreaks may have an impact on consumer and business confidence. Initial estimates indicate that the reintroduction of restrictions in metropolitan Melbourne and the Mitchell Shire in response to the latest virus outbreak will reduce national GDP in real terms by around 0.75 percentage point in the September quarter. The impact on economic activity will moderate in the December quarter, consistent with the assumed timetable of unwinding the new restrictions. Now, of course, that is all assuming that the Victorian outbreak is contained and the reintroduction restrictions are not extended further. The estimate also assumes that the outbreak does not spread beyond the lockdown localities to other areas of Victoria or Australia, but it does take into account the effect of the Victorian outbreak on consumer confidence and activity across the rest of Australia. So standing back, you can see that this is all very fuzzy And as I keep saying, until the virus is under control, until the health issues are locked away, the economic questions remain very strongly in focus. In fact, it's very hard to make certain predictions, but we can certainly say that Australia's debt has never been higher, and that is true essentially for consumers already, and it looks as though the government is following suit. And if those numbers are true, while on an international basis the government debt here may look reasonable, it is still a very large number, and of course there are some risks attached to that. But the point to make today is that this stake in the ground is frankly extremely wonky, and there are so many variables to it that the only way to deal with the situation is to continue to monitor what goes on and make adjustments to all the numbers as things change. And that's, of course, what we will continue to do both in our scenarios and in our broader reporting of the issues. This is far from over. There is absolutely no evidence of a V-shaped recovery. And in fact, the economic consequences of the COVID impact on the economy and the broader issues that were already wired into the economy before COVID arrived, and it's worth reiterating that, COVID has been a catalyst. It's not fundamentally changed the economy in its own right. We were already headed in a downward direction. This means that we're going to have a struggle over the next 3 to 5 years, and that in turn is going to have a significant impact on households and on businesses. And that's one of the reasons why I still hold to my view that house prices are more likely to go down rather than up from here, despite all of the extra incentives and initiatives that we're going to see from the government and from the RBA and other entities. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.